report it back in session.
Good morning still, and we are back on the record. And Silas, please be seated. Silas versus HSBC Bank. Parties are ready to proceed. Please do so. Please state your name for the record. And if you wish to reserve any time, please do so. If counsel on behalf of Silas is ready.
May it please the court, my name is Terry Thomas, and I represent the appellants, Emilio and Yvette Pisanis. I hope I pronounced that right. And this is a relatively straightforward, simple case. The conundrum that my clients have found themselves in were they showed up, paid their $200, took their time off work, got their mortgage modification professional's opinion, got a lawyer, and other side shows up, doesn't have the documents, isn't the beneficiary, nor the trustee. So what do? You get up, you go, I win. Bad faith, walk out. No. They try to make a deal. It's because no one wants a free house, no one wants a free ride. They want payments they can afford. So we go through it and go through it and go through it, and at the end, the mediator writes his opinion, his statement, I should say. And it says they didn't participate in bad faith. And most blatantly, which I reproduced on my brief at page 7, and it's in the appendix at 25-26, is the mediator's statement. About halfway down on line 5, it says, BNF stated investor approval would be required regarding a loan modification. When we went there, everybody went to the mediation thinking, well, we have someone who can modify the loan or not, depending on his or her record, the figures, whatever. And then we find out after all this time, energy, and money, well, he'd have to go back and get some investor approval.
Mr. Thomas, can I ask you this? At the mediation, I'm very confused in this record on who showed up and who was representing who in this case. Did a representative of the bank show up, the beneficiary to deed of trust, or did a representative of the trustee show up?
You have to go into the record and find the opposition to the response to petition for judicial review.
Counsel, were you there?
Yeah.
So maybe you could answer the question. Who showed up?
Someone who's an attorney who said he represented whoever was necessary to get the mediation done. And it specifically was not the listed beneficiary nor the listed trustee. And as you can see on page 36 and so forth, this is the same attorney, and he said he represents American Home Mortgage Servicing, erroneously sued as HSBC, and Power Default Services, erroneously named. And so whomsoever he represented, apparently a company called AHMI, whose relationship to my client's mortgage is unclear at best, decided that AHMSI didn't approve of the figures or the amounts or whatever. And he decided, or AHMSI decided, we would not get a modification. which resulted in the mediator's statement that they participated in bad faith. We still do not know to this day who owns the mortgage, who's the trustee, and who to talk to.
Okay. So Mr. Thomas, you were there. Were your clients at the mediation
with
you?
Yes, they were.
Okay. And then I'm trying to get the procedure, and I apologize for Jen. So then after the petition for judicial review was filed, apparently it was decided by Judge Flanagan without a hearing, or what happened then?
Well, we had a very short hearing. Judge Flanagan's order is one page where he it's on page 115 of the appendix, where he had a findings of fact and conclusions of law, and he said that negotiations were held between the parties, notwithstanding the fact that an agreement was not reached. The respondent has met the burden to show cause why sanctions should not lie.
Did you attend the hearing before Judge Flanagan?
I did.
So you disagree with the representation in the answering brief that you did not?
I certainly do.
Okay. But your client did not attend the hearing.
Son of a gun, it doesn't say so. I was definitely there.
Okay. So you were there representing the Pasillas?
Yes.
But the Pasillas themselves were not at the hearing, is that right?
Emiliano was.
Okay. And what relief do you seek from this court?
Well, I have, as every other attorney representing a mortgagor, has been told endless times by Judge Flanagan that he does not believe in sanctions or the sanction of modifying a loan. When we go to the mediation and the mediator finds bad faith, we are entitled to a sanction. And I am asking this court to remand this case with instructions to apply the sanctions that are available in AB 149, which is now 107.080 at SEC.
So every time there's a dissatisfied foreclosure mediation, you'd come to us to seek alternative sanctions?
Well, the law says that anyone may file a petition for bad faith. When we are given a mediator's report that says the other side did not participate in good faith, we are, according to the law, entitled to sanctions.
Yeah, at the discretion of the district court who hears the case, and you are not suggesting, I don't think, then, that a finding of bad faith automatically means a modification of a loan, are you?
I do not. But what I do say is that it just doesn't stop there. They remember at all times these lenders, if they can prove that they are in fact the lender, have the option of judicial foreclosure. We are in Never Never Land. I have no idea, and neither do my clients, how long they will stay in their house, what possible modification they could have, whether or not any of these entities that were expressed at the mediation have any relationship whatsoever to his loan or their loan. So we come to this court and ask you to please, if you do not believe that the sanction of modification is essential, but this court needs to define sanctions that are acceptable, because clearly it says sanctions.
At this point, because the certification has been denied, the foreclosure is not proceeding, correct?
That's correct.
And unlike the other two cases, if you were here earlier, I didn't notice whether you were or you weren't, there's been no second notice of default filed?
No, Your Honor, there has not.
So currently, this lender is dead in the water with respect to foreclosing on its security, correct?
That's correct.
And until it's able to bring forward, isn't that the sanction that's built into this statutory scheme?
It could be if this court so determines or so states in its opinion. My client is your standard working person who doesn't want a free house. He wants a payment that he can make that will be reasonable, that relates to the amount that the house is worth and the general economic situation.
So your proposal would be the correct sanction is a loan modification to achieve the goals you just stated.
Exactly, Your Honor. We do not want a free house. We don't want to hear, all these people are just trying to get away with everything. They want a modification. Remember, this house is worth roughly half what the loan is. Whether it my client is in it or Joe Smith is in it, that's all it's worth. That's all you're going to get.
Did you ask Judge Flanagan for a loan modification?
Well, I got an order.
Different question. When you petitioned for judicial review,
yes,
your papers, did you say, Judge Flanagan, please modify this loan as a sanction for this lender's failure to act in good faith?
I believe I did.
Well, did you set out the terms of how you wanted it modified?
I did not.
Well, can you explain to us just how you presented it to Judge Flanagan then?
Well, we have, when you file a petition, the judge gives you an order saying, yes, I'll have a judicial review, I'll have a hearing, an evidentiary hearing. At that time, we are prepared to put on our evidence, but there are really no evidentiary hearings. It's just an order. You stand up, you argue, that's the end of it, the judge makes a ruling. He probably correctly states that these are not judicial proceedings. These are administrative, and he does not wish to hear evidence.
No, but I'm just trying to get from you what you presented to Judge Flanagan as to what you wanted as far as the modification was concerned in this case.
I did not present numbers, Your Honor. I have found that... that has had no effect whatsoever, so we don't do it anymore. But we do ask that he set an evidentiary time for us to present numbers and for the opposition, the bank, to present numbers. That's fine with us. That may be the sanction that we should...
mediation program?
Mr. Thomas, maybe just to move on with this, so are you asking, if we agree with you, and we have to hear, of course, from your opposing counsel, get their point of view on this, but if we agreed with you that the judge abused his discretion by not ordering sanctions, all we could do would be to remand it to the judge to say, okay, consider sanctions, you'd make your argument for what you felt was appropriate and back it up as Justice Perry suggested, the other side would say, well, it isn't appropriate. The judge could rule, and then we could have something to review. Isn't that procedurally how it has to be done? We can't kind of pull this out of the sky right now.
I think you're correct.
Okay.
Are there any further questions?
Thank you.
Good morning again, Justices. My name is Greg Hubley. I represent HSBC Bank, which is the trustee for Luminant Mortgage Trust. It's loan servicer, American Home Mortgage Servicing Incorporated and Power Default Service Incorporated.
Counsel, who appeared at the hearing?
I'm glad you asked.
Foreclosure mediation.
Thank you. An attorney, there were two mediations, and I was actually going to start with this, so thank you, Your Honor. The first mediation, quite frankly, I'm not sure how to best address this, but Mr. Terry was not there. He was not there. An attorney with my office was there. Quang Nguyen, and the appellant, one of the appellants, I should say, was there. I believe it was Mrs. Pasillas. In fact, they spent, I believe, 5 hours trying to mediate that day, and my client did, in fact, offer a loan modification that provided the appellant with a monthly surplus in excess of $300 under the offer that was made. The appellant...
I could be wrong, but it was a 40-year monthly adjustable with a negatively amortizing 5-year fixed... so it was adding principal is what I understood it was, and that...
I don't believe that's accurate, Your Honor. And in all candor, I was not there. A representative of my office was. What I've seen is limited to my review of the pleadings. My understanding, Your Honor, is that a traditional loan application was offered that involved a 2% interest rate for the first 2 years, jumping to 2.5% for the third year, 3.5% for the fourth, 4.5% for the fifth, until maturity. And I do not believe it was a negative amortization.
So is
it added time onto the loan. It extended it back out to 40 years, I believe.
Okay.
I'm sorry, excuse me. It extended it to 437 months. But in any event, at the first mediation, Mr. Terry was not there, and the appellant actually, because this loan modification offer was made by my client, requested additional time of my client and the mediator to seek the assistance of counsel. Now then, they and my client and my office agreed to that and come back to mediation, and we came back another day, and Mr. Terry was present at the second mediation. And there we made the same offer before. Mr. Terry and his client came back with a different offer. In fact, they wanted either a principal reduction or a 50% deferment, interest-free until the end of the loan.
Now, counsel, can I ask you this again? Procedurally, I'm reading Mr. Lamboli's statement. It does say Mr. Terry was there on March 8th. Mr. Thomas, excuse me, was there on March 8th, and Heather Hudson from your office was there. Now, tell me specifically, please. Who did you represent? And that the beneficiary, the trustee, who?
We represented actually all, because we had American Home Mortgage Servicing Incorporated on the phone. They are the servicer of the loan. They are the entity to whom the Pasillases have been making their monthly payments.
Yeah, but they're not the beneficiary of the deed of trust.
You're correct. They are the representative of the beneficiary.
Well, are they authorized to modify the terms of the loan for the beneficiary of the deed of trust?
Absolutely and without question. And they made such an offer. In fact, they made two.
Counsel, let's, as a predicate to that, because I noticed a box had been checked, were the proper documents ever brought forth at either one of the hearings?
To answer your question completely, Your Honor, no. There were two pages missing from the note, and the assignment was a blank assignment. Now, the assignment, the original assignment is in the possession of AHMSI, American Home Mortgage Servicing. So,
but it was not brought to the hearing as required pursuant to the statute.
The assignment was brought to the hearing. Yes, it was. But it contained a blank next to the assignee. But it was brought there. Now, the note, Your Honor, was missing two pages. So
counsel, the foreclosure mediation rules are explicit. You know, what documents to bring, how they're authenticated, and all. And this is very disturbing to me here, that maybe there's some games being played here, that your client didn't have the proper documentation to show they own the beneficial interest of the deed of trust and were the proper representative. I could be wrong, but that's why you bring these documents. That's why it's specific how you bring it. And if you don't bring it, there's repercussions.
Sure.
Then.
And with all due respect, Your Honor, I think that is it is mistaken. In that you're absolutely correct that the rules require a number of documents to be brought by the lender. But that is not in and of itself the end of the inquiry as far as bad faith is related. It goes further than that. It goes and
counsel, if that's a specific edict from the legislature into this law, the failure to perform that condition then why should we jump any other hurdles?
Because the statute makes a finding of bad faith, makes that inquiry more than just looking at what documents were provided.
I didn't hear anything in the record saying your client came in and said, I only have this much of the documentation. I request a continuance to provide additional time to do that.
And Your Honor, in all honesty, that is not in the briefing, and I wasn't there, so I can't say
whether... Well, there's nothing in the mediator statement that they requested. Sure. He just says they didn't have it.
What I think is the important point to focus on here, and let me go back for one moment. I think that there's a misunderstanding, too, with what happened at the petition for judicial review hearing. The appendix that was attached to the opening brief, page 105, it is a transcript of the proceedings before Judge Flanagan. It does not indicate that Mr. Terry was present. It does not indicate that his client was present. It indicates only a representative of my office, an attorney, the same attorney who attended the first mediation, was present. And if you read through it, he is the only one who made arguments. The attorney from...
Counsel, I guess to cut to the chase from my view, and I can't speak for my colleagues on this bench, one of the troubling aspects for us is that the way the statute has been so crafted, if your client comes, doesn't have the paperwork, which is mandated that they put forth to begin the dialogue, they can engage in any kind of discussion, and then if the discussion fails, they said, well, gee, we participated in good faith. Well, you didn't jump the first hurdle to be there in good faith by bringing your documents. So I don't know and don't even care what got said in the second part of the argument, but the first part, it's like you shouldn't even be allowed to the table if you don't have your docs. That's just my call. But we do have an issue as to the lack of a clear definition of good faith and bad faith. And would you like to speak to that issue?
Thank you, Your Honor. And respectfully, my interpretation of it under the statute is that there are four situations in which sanctions against a lender can be imposed here. A failure to attend the mediation, failure to participate in the mediation in good faith, a failure to provide each document that's required by the statute, and a failure to have access to someone with authority. I made this argument earlier today. I think that the terms of the statute here are very clear, and I think that they provide different justifications for imposing sanctions. I don't think it's an all-or-nothing proposition. A lender could fail to attend. That could justify sanctions. A lender could fail to provide all the documents, and that could also justify sanctions. But if the legislature wanted the district court to impose sanctions in each and every case where a lender failed to supply documents, my understanding and my interpretation is that the statute would have said you are to impose sanctions, or the district court is to impose sanctions in every case where the lender has not provided all the documents strictly required. But the statute doesn't say that. It says that to determine whether to impose sanctions, there are a number of inquiries that need to be made. And what I think that Judge Flanagan did at the hearing here is he certainly took into consideration the fact that there were two pages missing from the note and the fact that the assignment was blank. He also took into consideration the fact that my client and the appellant here negotiated for 7 hours, that my client offered a couple of different loan modifications, the best of which resulted in a monthly surplus to the petitioner. Now, my understanding of what occurred at mediation is that the appellant jumped on the fact that, yeah, there were incomplete documents, and therefore you're not going to get your certificate, you're going to be sanctioned, so reduce my principal or defer my principal by 50%, or you're not going to be able to do anything with it. And quite frankly, I would posit to the court that that is not a good faith approach. My client came back with an offer that, again, allowed for a monthly surplus in excess of $300. And they rejected that, demanding instead a principal reduction. So I think that Judge Flanagan properly took all of this into consideration, and he exercised his discretion, which is,
Counsel, I understand what you're saying, the argument on the negotiations, but I have the same concern as Justice Douglas that, you know, to get there, I mean, the borrower doesn't even know it's your client's the beneficiary. I mean, you could be, this could be just some sham. It's being done to just to allow you to proceed with the foreclosure for all we know. I mean, I'm not saying that happened, but it potentially it could be. And I'm really, really disturbed about a blank assignment. Sounds to me like this might be a securitized mortgage pool of 1,000 mortgages that, gee, nobody ever got around to signing an assignment of the beneficial of the deed, interest of the deed of trust. And if that never happened, you have no right to foreclose. And they have an absolute right to see those documents that you're proper, you're the beneficiary and you have the proper assignments. If you don't, you shouldn't have filed the notice of default, and that potentially is a slander of title on the property. So that's what this program's all about, and that's why it has that requirement.
And you're absolutely right, Your Honor, and I think that those requirements, you hit the nail right on the head, and that's why they're there. But nonetheless, you know, there are other, if the situation that you described came into being, if we showed up and spent the time to prepare for this and our client said, I'm going to offer you this modification, and it was accepted, and ultimately it was a big sham, you know, the homeowner would indeed have a number of remedies under that situation once it turned out that it was a sham. They could sue for fraud. They could get punitive and treble damages if that were the case. The fact is, in this situation and in this case, it wasn't. American Home Mortgage Servicing is indeed the servicer of this loan. It had complete authority to enter into negotiations about modification and offer a loan modification.
How do we know that? I know they told you that, and I'm sure, I know you're making good faith representations to the court, but they don't have the authority to do that unless they have the assignment. Now, if they had come in and said, we think we have the assignment, but it's in this warehouse or something, and can you give us another 60 days to get it, I understand that. That may be a very reasonable request. But when to this day, we have no assignment of the beneficial interest of the trustee, which is mandatory, to even have the right to foreclose.
Well, they did, in fact, have the assignment. It was in their possession. It's a blank assignment. And the fact that it's in their possession, my understanding is that gives them authority whether or not it contains the name of American Home Mortgage Servicing. They do have the original in their possession. So they provided a copy of it. It is an actual copy of the assignment, which is required by the statute. And they did provide all their documents, again, with the exception of two pages from the note.
Okay, so your legal argument is that if you have an assignment, it's blank as to the assignee of the beneficial interest of the deed of trust, has no name on it, that that's sufficient to give somebody a right to foreclose, even though it's not even filled in who that is.
If they hold the original, yes.
That's okay, and you don't have to record the assignment of the beneficial interest of a deed of trust with the name of the assignee showing who the new owner of the beneficial interest is. You don't have to do that.
By all means, Your Honor, I think that is the more proper approach. I don't know that it's necessarily required, and under the rules of the of the Nevada Foreclosure Mediation Program and the statute, you know, it's the number of things that the lender has to provide are pretty specific. It's a certified copy of the note and the deed of trust, and it's a copy of all assignments. Frankly, and I'm not playing a semantic game. I'm just saying that that's what it says, and it also says you're to provide all assignments. And in this case, my client provided the assignment that was there. They didn't monkey with it or put their name in it.
You said they produced the note, only it was missing a couple pages on it.
Correct. That's
did they produce the original note, or was it a copy of
it? It was a certified copy, Your Honor.
Okay, it's a certified copy of a note that missed a couple pages.
Missed two pages, correct.
Okay. Yeah. And was that note assigned? Was it marked pay to the order of whoever the assignee is, or was it still payable to the original beneficiary of the deed of trust?
My understanding, Your Honor, is it was still made payable to the original beneficiary of the deed of trust.
Okay. So there was no assignment then because the note wasn't transferred, correct?
Again, it's also my understanding that the appellants had been making their payments before they defaulted to the assignee in this case, the American Home Mortgage. So, again, I think that I will concede there are better ways to do this, but I do think that what they did substantially complied with the statute, and that's what is required. And
I have a question on the procedure. The procedural posture of this case.
Please.
What was argued in the petition for judicial review, either in writing or orally, to Judge Flanagan by your opponents with respect to what they were asking Judge Flanagan to do?
I'm glad you brought that up, Your Honor, too, because in fact In all candor here, my opponent did, his petition for judicial review did request a loan modification in specific terms. I have it in front of me and read it. He did, in fact, request specific loan modification, including principal reduction and the specific terms thereof. So that was addressed. Now, that said.
And did he ask that the certification be withheld?
I believe that he did, Your Honor. I believe that he did. I know that he did.
It's in the record in any event, his petition for judicial review.
Well, I believe it is in the petition. I know he asked for a loan modification. I'm kind of presuming, in all honesty, that he asked that the letter of certification not issue. I know that none of this was brought up at the hearing because the transcript shows that there was only, it was frankly a one-sided hearing.
So there's not even a statement, I'm here and I'm appearing on behalf of. I mean, there's no record of an appearance.
There is not, Your Honor. There is not. And for the record, that's Appendix 105 to 109. And I know that my time has ended. I just want to say that I do believe that Judge Flanagan exercised the discretion that he had that was conferred on him by statute, and I think that he made the right call, and I think it should be upheld. And thank
Justice,
you, Your Honor.
Justice Sada has a question. And Justice
Sada. And I got one.
Just a quick question, which is a follow-up to Justice Gibbons with respect to the proper documents, proof of who owns the note, holds the note. Am I reading this addendum correctly when it says that even after we've gone through the 7 hours that you referred to of mediation, and even if we had made an agreement and we'd ignored all the blank documents, bottom line is this wasn't going to happen because they still needed investor approval?
Well, again, Your Honor, quite frankly, I wasn't at the mediation.
You're not disputing what the mediator's statement says, because that's what it says.
I'm not disputing what the mediator's statement says in that regard. If I may, though, I would offer that was not a subject of the lower court. That was not briefed and obviously was not brought up at the petition for judicial review, so I'm not sure that it should be addressed. I think it's a disputed issue of fact, Your Honor, but I wasn't there, so I can't tell you quite honestly whether or not it's accurate.
Well, the problem is that the mediator's statement says the BNF stated investor approval would be required regarding loan modification. Did not provide information regarding investors' criteria or instructions. Provided no information regarding acknowledged mortgage insurance. Well, but they go into some things of what was not there and lack of certification on some other documents. This is from the mediator who doesn't, he just writes or she wrote what they observed without being on one side or the other.
And Your Honor, if it had been argued to Judge Flanagan, perhaps he could have made a decision on that issue of fact.
I guess my concern was you argued, and I believe this was the word substantial compliance, notwithstanding
yes.
what the statute says, and I'm having a hard time finding substantial compliance. But that's, I'm just one of
I understand your position.
Justice Perry, you had one.
Just one simple little question. Should we make this a very simple process and encourage the mediators to pull the plug on these mediations when the proper documents aren't presented? It's almost a waiver of these defects, allowing these mediations to go forward and then go through this whole process when perhaps we ought to encourage these mediators to pull the plug right up front when the documents aren't produced and no certificate issues and go from there. It just seems like a whole lot of wasted time for nothing.
I do understand your concern, Justice. I would submit that I've done a number of mediations where all documents weren't provided that resulted in modification agreements, and this one here did result in what I seriously believe to be good faith negotiation.
But doesn't that also put you in a difficult position going forward? And you put all this time into a mediation and get to the bottom of it, and it falls apart, and then all of a sudden you come back. Well, you're in bad faith. You didn't produce your documents, and so you're in kind of a position there. Aren't you better off that you just have the mediator pull the plug right at the beginning and start over when you got the proper documents?
I don't think so, because I think that irrespective of whether all the documents are there page by page, you can still – satisfy the goals of the program to help people avoid foreclosure. And I think that that the legislature set it up properly by allowing the district court to review this and make and exercise its discretion to determine whether or not there was substantial compliance and good faith participation.
Thank you.
Any additional questions?
Thank you, Justices. Thank you for your time.
Counsel, you still have about a minute 59 if you wish to make any other statements to us.
I just would like to have the court's attention focused on page 8 of the appendix, which is my request and prayer for relief. And I think it's pretty broad, and it does not ask for a mortgage modification. Any questions?
What does it ask for?
It asks for the court to impose sanction consistent with petitioner's prayer for relief and consistent with NRS 107 as amended by AB 149. I think what it asks for clearly is that the court hold some kind of sanction hearing. And again, it's the court's discretion. I believe that we would ask at that hearing for a modification based on our figures, and the respondent could come back and the judge could make a determination based on the facts as presented, which we do not get an opportunity to present in a petition for judicial review.
But you asked for relief under AB 149, which does allow for principal or loan modifications.
Yes, it does.
And then, of course, the lender would have a right to argue whether that's a valid, that's allowable under the U.S. Constitution on modifying contracts.
And, so whether, and whether or not our figures make sense.
Okay.
Any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you,
Your Honors.
And again, thank you. Providing the information, this matter will stand submitted.